This is one nation under God.
Assuming Sherman's account to be accurate, unfortunately he didn't use a tape recorder and no other newspaper ran the story at the time, try the experiment of replacing atheists with Jews or Muslims or blacks. That gives the measure of the prejudice and discrimination that American atheists have to endure today. Natalie Angier's Confessions of a Lonely Atheist is a sad and moving description in the New York Times of her feelings of isolation as an atheist in today's America. But the isolation of American atheists is an illusion, assiduously cultivated by prejudice. Atheists in America are more numerous than most people realize. As I said in the preface, American atheists far outnumber religious Jews, yet the Jewish lobby is notoriously one of the most formidably influential in Washington. What might American atheists achieve if they organized themselves properly?
David Mills, in his admirable book, Atheist Universe, tells a story which you would dismiss as an unrealistic caricature of police bigotry if it were fiction. A Christian faith healer ran a miracle crusade which came to Mills' hometown once a year. Among other things, the faith healer encouraged diabetics to throw away their insulin and cancer patients to give up their chemotherapy and pray for a miracle instead. Reasonably enough, Mills decided to organize a peaceful demonstration to warn people. But he made the mistake of going to the police to tell them of his intention and ask for police protection against possible attacks from supporters of the faith healer. The first police officer to whom he spoke asked, "Is you gonna protest for him or agin him?" meaning for or against the faith healer. When Mills replied against him, the policeman said that he himself planned to attend the rally and intended to spit personally in Mills's face as he marched past Mills's demonstration.
Mills decided to try his luck with a second police officer. This one said that if any of the faith healer's supporters violently confronted Mills, the officer would arrest Mills because he was trying to interfere with God's work. Mills went home and tried telephoning the police station in the hope of finding more sympathy at a senior level. He was finally connected to a sergeant who said,
"To hell with you, buddy. No policeman wants to protect a goddamned atheist. I hope somebody bloodies you up good."
Apparently adverbs were in short supply in this police station, along with the milk of human kindness and a sense of duty. Mills relates that he spoke to about 7 or 8 policemen that day. None of them was helpful, and most of them directly threatened Mills with violence.
Anecdotes of such prejudice against atheists abound, but Margaret Downey of the Freethought Society of Greater Philadelphia maintains systematic records of such cases. Her database of incidents categorized under community, schools, workplace, media, family, and government includes examples of harassment, loss of jobs, shunning by family, and even murder. Downey's documented evidence of the hatred and misunderstanding of atheists makes it easy to believe that it is indeed virtually impossible for an honest atheist to win a public election in America. There are 435 members of the House of Representatives and 100 members of the Senate. Assuming that the majority of these 535 individuals are an educated sample of the population, it is statistically all but inevitable that a substantial number of them must be atheists. They must have lied or concealed their true feelings in order to get elected. Who can blame them, given the electorate they had to convince? It is universally accepted that an admission of atheism would be instant political suicide for any presidential candidate.
These facts about today's political climate in the United States and what they imply would have horrified Jefferson, Washington, Madison, Adams, and all their friends. Whether they were atheists, agnostics, deists, or Christians, they would have recoiled in horror from the theocrats of early 21st century Washington. They would have been drawn instead to the secularist founding fathers of post-colonial India, especially the religious Gandhi.
"I am a Hindu, I am a Muslim, I am a Jew, I am a Christian, I am a Buddhist."
And the atheist Nehru.
"The spectacle of what is called religion, or at any rate organized religion, in India and elsewhere, has filled me with horror, and I have frequently condemned it and wished to make a clean sweep of it. Almost always it seemed to stand for blind belief and reaction dogma and bigotry, superstition, exploitation, and the preservation of vested interests.
Nehru's definition of the secular India of Gandhi's dream, would that it had been realized instead of the partitioning of their country amid an interfaith bloodbath, might almost have been ghosted by Jefferson himself.
We talk about a secular India,